The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see Kalshi.com/regulatory.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs. And become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable ad-free tales of terror. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show.
Good evening. I'm storyteller Otis Gyre, and I ain't your grandfather. From where I'm from, we don't do bedtime stories. And if that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. If it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker. Who needs sleep anyway?
Good evening, you're listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark. Welcome to Season 5, Episode 7. I'm your host, Otis Gyre. In tonight's episode, I'll be performing four stories for you about evil antiques, malevolent motels, documents danger, and occult attacks. You're listening to the standard edition of tonight's program, which contains the first two terrifying tales. If you'd like to show your support and enjoy an extended version of this and other episodes with twice the terror, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. Thank you for your support. Now, it's time to take a walk together down the moonlit trail. So lock your doors, turn your lights down low, and settle in. The show's about to begin. Our first tale of terror this evening comes to us from Joseph Payne Brennan, an American poet and writer of fantasy and horror fiction, as well as an early biographer of H.P. Lovecraft, who sadly passed away 30 years ago this past January. During his lifetime, Brennan published several hundred short stories, two novellas, and thousands of poems, and had his work featured in more than 200 anthologies. In tonight's episode, we keep Brennan's memory alive with the telling of one of his darkest tales. In it, a gentleman gets a great deal on an antique chest made from a rare and beautiful wood. As the old saying goes, however, things that are too good to be true probably are. And in our protagonist's case, he's about to find out, he's got far more to worry about than whether he's been swindled. Stick around and discover what mysteries the seemingly empty box holds. Without further ado, I present to you the Calamander Chest.
From the Indies, sir, said the second-hand dealer, pressing his palms together. Genuine calamander wood. A rare good buy, sir. Well, I'll take it, replied Ernest Max, somewhat hesitantly. He had been strolling idly by through the antique and second-hand shop when the chest caught his attention. It had a rich, exotic look which pleased him. In appearance, the dark brown, black-striped wood resembled ebony. The chest was quite capacious. It was at least 2 feet wide and 5 feet long, with a depth of nearly 3 feet. When Max learned that the dealer was willing to dispose of it for only $12, he could not resist buying it. What made him hesitate a little was the dealer's initial low price and quite obvious pleasure upon completing the transaction. Was that fine-grained wood only an inlay, or did the chest contain some hidden defect? When it was delivered to his room the next day, he could find nothing wrong with it. The calamander wood was solid and sound, and the entire chest appeared to be in fine condition. The lid clicked smoothly into place when lowered, and the big iron key turned readily enough. Feeling quite satisfied with himself, Max carefully polished the dark wood, and then slid the chest into an empty corner of his room. The next time he changed his lodgings, the chest would prove invaluable. Meanwhile, it added just the right exotic touch to his rather drab chamber. Several weeks passed, and although he still cast occasional, admiring glances at his new possession, it gradually began to recede from his mind. Then one evening, his attention was returned to it in a very startling manner. He was sitting up, reading, late in the evening, when, for some reason, his eyes lifted from his book, and he looked across the room toward the corner where he had placed the chest. A long white finger protruded from under its lid. He sat motionless, overwhelmed with sudden horror, his eyes riveted on this appalling object. It just hung there, unmoving, a long, pale finger with a heavy knuckle bone and black nail. After his first shock, Max felt a slow rage kindling within him. The finger had no right to be there. It was unreasonable and idiotic. He resented it bitterly, much as he would have resented the sudden intrusion of an unsavory rumor from down the hall. His peaceful, comfortable evening was ruined by this outrageous manifestation. With an oath, he hurled his book straight at the finger. It disappeared. At least he could no longer see it. Tilting his reading light so that its beam shot across the room, he strode to the chest and flung open the lid. There was nothing inside. Dropping the lid, he picked up his book and returned to the chair. Perhaps, he reflected, he'd been reading too much lately. His eyes, in protest, might be playing tricks on him. For some time longer, he pretended to read, but at frequent intervals he lifted his eyes and looked across the room toward the calamander chest. The finger did not reappear, and eventually he went to bed. A week passed, and he began to forget about the finger. He stayed out more during the evening and read less, and by the end of a week he was quite convinced that he'd been the victim of nothing more than an odd hallucination, brought on by simple eye strain. At length, at the evening of the second week, deciding that his eyes had had a good rest, he bought some current magazines and made up his mind to spend the evening in his room. Some time after he took up the first magazine, he glanced over at the chest and saw that all was as it should be. Settling comfortably in his chair, he became absorbed in the magazine and did not put it aside for over an hour. As he finally laid it down and prepared to pick up another, his eyes strayed in the direction of the chest, and there was the finger. It hung there, as before, motionless, with its thick knuckle and repulsive black nail. Crowding down an impulse to rush across the room, Max slowly reached over to a table that stood near his chair and felt for a heavy metal ashtray. As his hand closed on the tray, his eyes never left the finger. Rising very slowly, he began to inch across the room. He was certain that the ashtray, if wielded with force, would effectively crush anything less substantial than itself which it descended on. It was made of solid metal, and it possessed a sharp edge. When he was a scant yard away from the chest, the finger disappeared. When he lifted the lid, the chest, as he had expected, was empty. Feeling considerably shaken, he returned to his chair and sat down. Although the finger did not reappear, he could not drive its hideous image out of his mind. Before going to bed, he reluctantly decided that he would get rid of the chest. He was in sound health, and his eyes had had a week's rest. Therefore, he reasoned, whatever flaw in nature permitted the ugly manifestation rested not with him, but with the chest itself. Looking back, he recalled the second-hand dealer's eagerness to sell the chest at a ridiculously low price. The thing must already have had an evil reputation when the antique dealer acquired it. Knowing it, the unscrupulous merchant had already consented to part with it for a small sum. Max, a practical young man, admitted the possibility of a non-physical explanation only with reluctance, but felt that he was not in a position to debate the matter. The preservation of stable nerves came first. All other considerations were secondary. Accordingly, on the following day, before leaving for work, he arranged with his landlady to have the chest picked up and carted off to the city dump. He included specific directions that, upon arrival, it was to be burned. When he arrived back at his room that evening, however, the first thing that met his gaze was the calamander chest. Furious, he hurried down the hall to his landlady's apartment and demanded an explanation. Why had his orders been ignored? When she was able to get a word in, the patient woman explained that the chest actually had been picked up and carted off to the dump. Upon arrival, however, the man in charge of the dump had assured the men who lugged in the chest that there must be some mistake. Nobody in his right mind, he asserted, would destroy such a beautiful and expensive article. The men must have picked up the wrong one. Surely there must be another left behind, he said, which was the worthless one the owner wanted discarded. The two men who had taken the chest to the dump, not feeling secure in their own minds about the matter, and not wishing to make a costly mistake, had returned the chest later in the day. Completely nonplussed by this information, Max muttered an apology to the landlady, and then went back to his room, where he plopped into a chair and sat staring at the chest. He would, he finally decided, give it one more chance. If nothing further happened, he would keep it. Otherwise, he would take immediate and drastic measures to get rid of it once and for all. Although he planned to attend a concert that evening, it began to rain shortly after 6 o'clock, and he resigned himself to an evening in his room. Before starting to read, he locked the chest with the iron key and put the key in his pocket. It was absurd that he had not thought of doing so before. This would, he felt, be the decisive test. While he read, he maintained a keen watch on the chest, but nothing happened until well after 11, when he put aside his book for the evening. As he closed the book and started to rise, he looked at the chest, and there was the finger. In appearance, it was unchanged. Instead of hanging slack and motionless, however, it now seemed to be imbued with faint life. Quivered slightly, and it appeared to be making weak attempts to scratch the side of the chest with its long black nail. When he finally summoned sufficient courage, Max took up the metal ashtray as before and crept across the room. This time he actually had the tray raised to strike before the finger vanished. It seemed to whisk back into the chest. With a wildly thumping heart, Max lifted the lid. Again, the box was empty. But then he remembered the iron key in his pocket, and a new thrill of horror coursed down his spine. The hideous digital apparition had unlocked the chest. Either that, or he was rapidly losing his sanity. Completely unnerved, he locked the chest for a second time, and then sat in a chair and watched it until 2 o'clock in the morning. At length, exhausted and deeply shaken, he sought his bed. Before putting out the light, he ascertained that the chest was still locked. As soon as he fell asleep, he experienced a hideous nightmare. He dreamed that a persistent scratching sound woke him up, that he arose, lit a candle, and looked at the chest. The protruding finger showed just under the lid, and this time it was galvanized with an excess of life. It twisted and turned, drummed with its thick knuckle, scratched frantically with its flat black nail. At length, as if it suddenly became aware of his presence, it became perfectly still, and then, very deliberately, beckoned for him to approach. Flooded with horror, he nevertheless found himself unable to disobey. Settling down the candle, he slowly crossed the room, like an automaton. The monstrous beckoning finger drew him on like some infernal magnet, which attracted human flesh instead of metal. As he reached the chest, the finger darted inside, and the lid immediately lifted. Overwhelmed with terror, and yet utterly unable to stop himself, he stepped into the closet, sat down, drew his knees up to his chin, and turned onto his side. A second later, the lid slammed shut, and he heard the iron key turn in the lock. At this point in the nightmare, he awoke with a ringing scream. He sat up in bed and felt a sweat of fear running down his face. In spite of the nightmare, or because of it, he dared not get up and switch on the light. Instead, he burrowed under the bedclothes and lay wide awake till morning. After he had regained some measure of self-composure, he went out for black coffee and then, instead of reporting to his job, rode across town to the modest home of a truck driver and mover whom he had hired at various times in the past. After some quite detailed and specific plans had been agreed upon, he paid the mover $10 and departed with a promise to pay him an equal amount when the job was done. After lunch, considerably relieved, he went to work. He entered his room that evening with a confident air, but as soon as he looked around, his heart sank. Contrary to instructions, the mover had not picked up the chest. It remained in the corner just where it had been. This time Max was more depressed than angry. He sought out a telephone and called up the mover. The man was profusely apologetic. His truck had broken down, he explained, just as he was starting out to pick up the chest. The repairs were nearly complete, however, and he would absolutely be out to carry off the chest the first thing in the morning. Since there was nothing else he could do, Max thanked him and hung up. Finding himself unusually reluctant to return to his room, he ate a leisurely dinner at a nearby restaurant and later attended a movie. After the movie, he stopped and had a hot chocolate. It was nearly midnight before he got back to his room. In spite of his nightmare of the previous evening, he found himself looking forward to bed. He had lost almost an entire night's sleep, and he was beginning to feel the strain. After assuring himself that the calamander chest was securely locked, he slipped the iron key under his pillow and got into bed. In spite of his uneasiness, he soon fell asleep. Some hours later, he awoke suddenly and sat up. His heart was pounding. For a moment, he was not aware of what had awakened him. Then he heard it. A furious scratching, tapping, thumping sound came from one corner of the room. Trembling violently, he got out of bed, crossed the room, and pressed the button on his reading lamp. Nothing happened. Either the electricity was shut off, or the light bulb had burned out. He pulled open a drawer of the lampstand and frantically searched for a candle. By the time he had found one and applied a match to its wick, the scratching sound had redoubled in intensity. The entire room seemed filled with it. Shuddering, he lifted the candle and started across the room toward the calamander chest. As the wavering light of the candle flickered into the far corner, he saw the finger. It protruded far out of the chest, and it was writhing with furious life. It thrummed and twisted and dug at the chest with its horrible black nail, tapped and turned in an absolute frenzy of movement. Suddenly, as he advanced, it became absolutely still. It hung down limp, engulfed with terror. Max was convinced that it had become aware of his approach and was now watching him. When he was halfway across the room, the finger slowly lifted and deliberately beckoned to him. With a rush of renewed horror, Max remembered the ghostly event of his dream. Yet, as in the nightmare, he found himself utterly unable to disobey that diabolical summons. He went on like a man in a trance. Early the next morning, the mover and his assistant were led into Max's room by the landlady. Max had apparently left for work, but there was no need of his presence, since he had already given the mover detailed instructions in regard to the disposal of the chest. The chest, locked but without a key, stood in one corner of the room. The melted wax remains of a candle, burned to the end of its wick, lay nearby. The landlady shook her head.
"A good way to burn the house down," she complained. "I'll have to speak to Mr. Max. Not like him to be so careless."
The movers, burdened with the chest, paid no attention to her. The assistant growled as they started down the stairs.
"Must be lined with lead. Never knew a chest so heavy before."
"Heavy wood," his companion commented shortly, not wishing to waste his breath.
"Wonder why he's dumping such a good chest,"
the assistant asked later as the truck approached an abandoned quarry near the edge of town. The chief mover glanced at him slyly.
"I guess I know," he said. "He bought it off of Jason Kendall, and Kildendall never told him the story on it. But he found out later, I figure, and that's why he's ditching it."
The assistant's interest picked up.
"Well, what's the story?" he asked.
They drove into the quarry grounds and got out of the truck.
"Kendall bought it dirt cheap at an auction,"
the mover explained as they lifted out the chest.
"Auction of old Henry Stubberton's furniture."
The assistant's eyes widened as they started up a steep slope with a chest.
"You mean the Stubberton they found murdered in a..."
"In a chest," the mover finished for him.
"This chest."
Neither spoke again until they set down the chest at the edge of a steep quarry shaft. Glancing down at the deep water which filled the bottom of the shaft, the mover wiped the sweat from his face. "Pretty sight, they say," he saw. "All doubled up and turning black. Seemed he wasn't dead when they shut him in, though. They say he must have tried to claw his way out. When they opened the chest, they found one of his fingers jammed up under the lid near the lock. Tried to pick the lock with his fingernail, it looked like." The assistant shuddered.
"Let's be rid of it, then."
"Bad luck, sure." The mover nodded.
"Take hold and shove."
They strained together, and in another second the calamander chest slipped over the edge of the quarry and hurtled toward the pool of black water far below.
There was one terrific splash, and then it sank from sight like a stone. "That's good riddance and another tenner for me," the mover commented. Oddly enough, however, he never collected the tenner, for that very day Mr. Ernest Max dropped completely out of sight. He was never seen or heard of again. The disgruntled mover, never on the best of terms with the police, shrugged off the loss of the tenner and neglected to report the disposal of the chest. And since the landlady had never learned the mover's name, nor where he intended taking the chest, her sparse information was of no help in the search. The police concluded that Max had got into some scrape, changed his name, and effected a permanent change of locale. I hope you enjoyed The Calamander Chest by author Joseph Payne Brennan, as performed by yours truly. Up next, we've got another terrifying tale, this one from author Maya Ellert. In it, we'll meet a traveler who has the misfortune of checking in at a seemingly ordinary motel for an overnight stay, only to find out that their single occupancy room is already occupied. Without further ado, I present to you, I'm at your bedroom window. A warning for my fellow travelers. If you ever have a layover in Philly overnight, don't spend the night at the Economy Motel. And if you absolutely must, steer clear of room 103. I was heading south to visit some family members for a few weeks, and unfortunately the only flight available included a 7-hour layover in Philadelphia. Not wanting to spend those hours huddled outside the airport, I rented the cheapest motel I could find and took the shuttle over at about 11 p.m. The place was just about the shadiest looking motel I'd ever seen, but it was a bed, right? I checked in, headed to my room, 103. Exhausted, I immediately collapsed on the bed. A bit lumpy, but not terrible. Not bothering to take my contacts out, I closed my eyes and let my thoughts wander. I was yanked back to reality by a loud grumbling from my stomach. Right. The airline hadn't fed us. Annoyed, I dug around in my bag for one of those microwavable soup cups, which I tossed in the room's microwave. As the microwave rattled away, I noticed a piece of paper wedged underneath it. I yanked it out and unfolded it. There were two words scribbled on it hastily. "Don't look." "Huh?" "Whatever." I tossed it aside and retrieved my soup. Feeling lonely, I hopped online to see if anyone was on. I was in luck. My long-lost distance boyfriend happened to be on Skype. I called him up and we chatted a while, trying to keep our voices down. Eventually, though, he said something that made me laugh, and I heard a muffled curse come from upstairs. Feeling guilty, I said my goodnights and ended the call, with the intention of getting a bit of rest before my next flight. As I lay in the now dark room, I noticed a thin stream of light coming from where the curtain didn't completely close. Annoyed, I got up to it close. It was almost at the window when I heard it. "I can see into your bedroom." The voice sent a chill up my spine. It was very quiet and high-pitched, like a child's. It was so soft. I wasn't sure I hadn't just imagined it. I shook my head and reached for the curtain. "I know you can hear me. I'm at your bedroom window, and I know you can hear me." I jumped back as a shadow crossed the stream of light coming into my room. I definitely hadn't imagined it that time. There was a voice directly outside my door. Someone was out there looking in. I jumped back into bed and pulled the covers up to my chin.
I'm in your bedroom window. I know you can hear me. I can see in your bedroom. Are you listening to me? I know you can hear me. Come, take a look. I'm at your bedroom window.
The taunting went on and on, rattling into my thoughts and leaving me paralyzed in fear. Suddenly, I heard the tenant upstairs moving around again. Footsteps stomped over to the door above, and I heard muffled shouting.
Hey! Shut up down there! This isn't funny! After working 4 hours!
The door upstairs slammed, and there was silence. I breathed a sigh of relief and leaned back against the pillow, determined to get some sleep.
I'm still out here. Come, look at your window.
I sat straight up, my heart pounding in my ears. The voice was back. It whispered on and on, repeating its mantra over and over again. I put my hands over my ears and rocked back and forth, trying to block out the sound. It was no use. The longer I sat there, the louder it got, until I could hear it so clearly. It sounded like it was right next to me. Frantic, I picked up the phone and dialed the police. Stammering and stuttering in fright, I managed to give them the information. Where I was, what was wrong, please help, I'm scared. I didn't care if it was a prank at this point. My mind was reeling in terror. The officers assured me they'd be over shortly to see what the issue was. I thanked them and hung up the phone. As soon as I did, silence descended over the room. It wasn't just that the voice stopped. No. Utter silence filled the room. The air conditioner stopped. The street noises outside ceased. Even the faint hum of electricity from the TV and lights went away. It pressed on my ears with a tangible heaviness that sent shivers through me. Next to me, my phone rang. The caller ID told me that it was the police station calling me back. Cautiously, I picked it up and answered.
Hello?
I whispered.
They aren't coming,
growled the voice. And every light went out, plunging the room into complete and total darkness. In the dark, I fumbled for my bag. I might not have had a flashlight, but I did have my video camera, which had a weak light on it. Besides, I can't deny I wanted to film this, if only to prove that I wasn't going insane. Finding it, I turned it on, casting a dim light over the room. Even with this light, the shadows still consumed the edges of my vision, making me jump at every perceived motion I caught in the corner of my eye. Shaking, I forced myself to focus on the camera. Carefully, I stood up from the bed and walked toward where I thought the curtain was. The thin light from the camera only served to give a vague outline of the curtain and door, as though the darkness that had swallowed the room was now even working against the light from my camera. Carefully, I reached out and touched the curtain, pushing it closed all the way. Whatever was out there couldn't look in now. As I did, I heard a loud clicking sound next to me, like a latch turning in the door. Panicked, I whipped around to look at the door. Inexplicably, it had opened on its own. The latching sound I had heard, however, was the door getting caught by the extra security lock. I could see nothing through the crack, just more inky blackness outside. I slammed the door shut again, double-checking the locks and latches. Everything was in place. I breathed a sigh of relief. That's when I heard it. A sort of scuttling sound, coming from the back of my room, somewhere in the direction of the bathroom. Cautiously, I moved slowly toward the noise, trying to keep my hands from shaking too badly. I knew whatever footage I got was going to be a mess of wobbly camera, but my videographer's skills weren't exactly my top priority at the moment. I approached the source of the noise but found nothing there, except for another piece of paper, wedged partly beneath the wall, length mirror, next to the closet. I fumbled to open the folded-up scrap, trying not to tear it in my haste. When I finally got it open, there were only two words. Turn around. I was not about to do anything of the sort. Trembling, I slowly looked up at the mirror while pointing my camera behind me at the same time. To my horror, the light from the camera illuminated a faint silhouette of something behind me. All I could make out was a vague form, no taller than the height of the bed, and it was moving toward me. I broke out of my paralysis and dove into the bathroom, slamming the door behind me. Quietly sobbing, I leaned against the door and slowly slid until I was sitting on the cracked tiles, the door firmly closed and locked behind me. Whatever it was scrabbled a bit at the bottom of the door. Then came the whisper.
Let me in. I'm out here in the dark. Let me in.
Go away! I screamed. The voice stopped abruptly. I shivered and let out the breath I'd been holding in tightly. I still clung to my camera, unwilling to let go of the one thing that was keeping me tethered to reality. I sat there until the rays of early sunlight began peeking under the door, and I knew I was safe. Carefully, I cracked open the door and peeked around. The coast was clear. In a rush, I grabbed all my luggage and raced out the door. The hotel manager looked at me kind of oddly, but I wasn't going back in that room. I spent the next hour waiting for the shuttle in the lobby. The flight to my aunt's house was short and uneventful. I spent the flight running over what had happened over and over in my mind. Could it have been a prank? Who could have done that? It didn't matter. It was over. I was out of that insane place, on my way to family and friends. I tried to put the whole thing behind me and just enjoy the ride. I've always loved flying. Watching the world fall away behind me is one of the most incredible feelings. The patterns beneath you, the rivers and ponds, and winding roads spotted here and there in cottony clouds, shadowing the land. This time, however, I just couldn't enjoy the scenery. I was too on edge from the previous night's events. The plane finally landed, and I just about ran to meet my aunt and cousins. Finally, I could start my vacation and get back to a normal state of mind. I hugged my aunt and my little cousin so tight, just to be sure they were real. We all laughed and packed up the car with my luggage to head home. I didn't tell them about the motel. That night, my aunt made my favorite pan-seared salmon, dripping with lemon and butter. Since she lived so close to the beach, it was fresh from that day's catch. I don't think I've ever had anything so sweet and fresh. Sitting here with my family, I could almost laugh off the events of the night before. Almost. Silence descended upon the house as night fell upon us, bringing with it a thick fog. The little cousins toddled off to bed, yawning and rubbing their eyes. My aunt and I sat quietly in the living room, her reading, me silently recalling the night before over and over. Finally, exhausted, I got up and announced that I was heading to bed early. A bit surprised, my aunt wished me good night, and I headed to my room to collapse. Once alone, however, I felt unease creep in around me. The only lamp in the room was the bright overhead, too bright to sleep with, and with the fog as thick as it was, no light came in from outside. As if that weren't unsettling enough, at the foot of my bed was a very large window, and there was no curtain, only a Venetian blind. I shivered and turned onto my side so I couldn't see the window. Slowly, I fell into a fitful sleep. I woke up sometime around 3 a.m. to an odd squeaking noise, like nails running across glass or tile. Confused, I sat up and looked around. Blinking, my eyes slowly adjusted to the darkness. Still, I could see nothing that could be making a noise. In fact, it seemed to be coming from somewhere outside. My heart rate quickened as I stood up and approached my bedroom window with apprehension. With shaking fingers, I reached for the pull to open the blinds. I yanked down with one swift tug, and the blinds flew open. Nothing. I let out the breath I had been holding in a rush. I'd only imagined it. Or had I? As I glanced down, I noticed the long, slightly smudged mark near the bottom of the window, as though some grubby hand or paw had run along the glass looking for a way in. I dropped the blinds, dashed back to bed, and pulled the covers over my head, desperate for some sleep. It seemed impossible that I'd ever get back to sleep after that, but eventually I drifted off, dreaming of strange noises and small, scuttling creatures hiding just at the edge of my vision. I woke up in the late morning, head wreathed in a fog from a restless night. My phone was buzzing next to me. Squinting, I glanced at it to see that I had 5 unread messages, all from my aunt. I shook my head, not wanting to bother with it at the moment, and fell back against the lumpy pillow. Something was wrong. My eyes flew open and I sat up. No, even without glasses or contacts, I could tell I wasn't in my room at my aunt's house. But no, I couldn't be. I wasn't. No. I was. I was back in the motel room from the night before. I tried to scream, but only choked a cry that escaped my lips. I looked back at my phone. Every message from my aunt was a variation on, "Where are you?" Still, in my pajamas, I ran to the door, threw it open, and dashed to the office. In a panic, I ran in and immediately started begging the manager for help. He looked up, startled, not at me, but at the door I had just come in through. "That door again? I thought I'd fix that damn thing." Without a single glance at me, he walked over and shoved the door closed, giving it an extra push with his shoulder. He hadn't even seen me. Later, I returned to room 103, numb and confused. As I sat on the bed, I heard the voice one last time. "You're mine now," it taunted. I didn't care. I couldn't even muster up emotion anymore. I've lost count of the days I've spent here by now. I don't think I'm dead, just not quite synced up with the rest of the world. These days, I'm the one leaving the notes, warning travelers not to look out the window. Most of them laugh when they see my scribblings. But I don't worry too much. It's the people that dwell too long on my message that worry me. They're the ones that listen too closely to the voice in the window. They're the ones that might end up like me someday. There's a young couple staying here right now. I'm sitting outside now, waiting for them to quiet down and go to sleep. I'm trying not to think of how my life was before I ended up here. I mean, I tried leaving, but I can't get past the parking lot entrance. The only knowledge I get from the outside world now is from my phone and the occasional news program I watch during what passes for a continental breakfast at this motel. I think the two inside have fallen asleep. Well, at least he has. I'm not worried about him, his girlfriend or fiancé or whatever. I'm concerned for her. She's still up, eyes darting around. I know she saw my note, and she's definitely upset. She's a perfect target. Excuse me now, I'm going to huddle in the closet with my hands over my ears. The voice is going to start soon.
I hope you enjoyed I'm at Your Bedroom Window by author Maya Ellert, as performed by yours truly. I'd like to personally thank you for joining me for this episode of Scary Stories Told in the Dark. If you enjoyed what you've heard, please take a moment to stop by our iTunes page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcast and leave us a 5-star review and a kind word. It makes a huge difference and would mean a lot to us. If you'd like to hear a premium extended edition of tonight's and all of our other episodes featuring twice the terror, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click the patrons link in the menu at the top of the screen. You'll find yourself at chillingtalesfordarknights.com, where you can purchase season passes for this podcast and our other quality storytelling programs, or become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to our entire audio archive dating back to 2012, all of it ad-free. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all of our latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with us each and every week. You can subscribe to me on YouTube as well at the Otis Gyrie channel, where you'll find releases of my series Horror Storytime dating back to 2014. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram too. Just search for Otis Gyrie. Until next week, stay spooky and get some sleep, if you can. Nah.
Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Scary Stories Told in the Dark, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcasts Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com today to learn more about our network and our other amazing storytelling programs. Tonight's program was hosted, and its featured stories, performed by yours truly, Otis Gyrie. Selected stories have been adapted with the kind permission of their respective authors. Original music provided by Luke Hodgkinson and Jesse Cornett. Sound design and final mixing and mastering provided by executive producer and director Craig Groschek. Program's artwork and logo by David Romero. If you're looking for some fresh tales on a daily basis while waiting for the next podcast, check out my YouTube channel, the Otis Gyrie channel, and my extensive collection of narrated tales there. Simply search on YouTube by my name and you'll find me. And don't forget to subscribe and press the bell notification icon to get my latest releases. Got a scary tale of your own that you'd like performed? I take submissions. Email it to me today at otis@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your terrifying tome considered for production in a future episode of this show. That's otis@simplyscarypodcast.com. If you've enjoyed what you heard on tonight's program and are joining us on your favorite podcast app, subscribe to us to be sure you never miss an episode and leave a 5-star review and a comment. Your feedback means a lot to me. You can also follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights and yours truly on Facebook to connect anytime and get the latest updates on this and other programs and my channel. If you're listening on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, do us a favor and hit the subscribe button and the bell notification icon for CTFDN as well to get more spooky tales from me and the crew and another episode of this program each and every Wednesday. And don't forget to hit that thumbs up button to tell us how we're doing and leave a kind word or a request. And don't forget to visit us at chillingtalesfordarknights.com and consider supporting the team by becoming a patron. In addition to helping us out, you'll get exclusive access to our audio archive and ad-free downloads of all your favorite stories, including those you've heard on this program. As for me, I'll be back next Wednesday with more terrifying tales to keep you up all night. But that's all right. Who needs sleep anyway?
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.